This is an oral history interview with Dave Cadenhead conducted by Richard Dink on Friday, March 22nd, 1995 at Dave's house. The subject of this interview is weapons throughout history. What kind of weapons were originally used in the hunting fields?
The original weapon that was used in the hunting field was designed and built by the Indian, which is a very crude thing. And to begin with, the first one was called a long bow, which is a piece of wood about 6 or 8 foot long with a string pulled from one end of it to the other. When then an arrow was placed on that string and pulled back, putting more stress on the main piece of wood that you had the string across, and turned it loose. And their aim was amazingly accurate, and it was good for up to about 60 to 75 yards, and would penetrate a grown buffalo at that range. The Indian designed and built that and is hunting for meat for his family and also for his warfare that he had. And also they had, of course, axes and tomahawks and things that they used that they were extremely accurate with in throwing those things. But then when the Americans came over to this part of the country and they started taking over, the Indian then was at a loss with a bow against a gun, so-called now a rifle, and he lost a lot of men. They lost a lot of men in there. The white man came over, and about I think it was in 1202 that gunpowder was created by our manufactured by the Chinese people, and they did it first for firecrackers and noises that they used in their religious ceremonies, and then they began to build weapons that would handle this powder, and using that as a propellant to get a lead ball or some other fairly heavy object out where he wanted it and to his target. This was propelled by this powder from the muzzle or from a gun called a muzzle loader, which had a hammer and a nipple on it, and the fire went in at the back of it from a flint and fired the bursting charge, which is in the breech of the gun, forcing that bullet out at the muzzle, and they were surprisingly accurate, but only had a range of about 100 yards. Then the white man started improving on all of these things and the weapons that he used, and went from muzzle loaders into lever actions, which is the Model 73 Winchester, and on then into the Model 94 Winchester, and do heavy rifles than that, like the big 460 double, and then the shotguns and handguns as we know them today. These weapons were used for protection of family, well, family protection, for hunting meat for the table, for killing each other, for any kind of destruction that man wanted to use a weapon for. And the powder was used in its form that day for bursting charges, for blowing up anything that they wanted to blow up or destroy. Some of our finest weapons were made in Germany at first, and then in England, The big double rifles were made in England. The shotguns were made there. Some of the finest guns in the world were made and came out of Furlock, Austria. There's some beautiful guns there now. And at that time, they started on the double gun at about $6,000 a gun. These weapons were also used in a sporting fashion, with long-range target practice, short-range target practice, and with the rifles, and some people were very proficient at a quarter of a mile away with open sights on them. Others used heavy, long scopes, powerful scopes, like the 10X and Leopold, and they also used the shotgun in bird hunting and deer hunting. They use it in trap shooting, and they also use it in skeet and for almost any other kind of sporting hunt that they wanted to find, including waterfowl of various kinds. They started out with in the waterfowling for market killing. They used to kill geese and duck and any other waterfowl that they might deem edible. They would take the big, the first shotguns that came out for this purpose was the 4-gauge shotgun, which was almost as big as a stick of dynamite, a round stick. And then they went to the 8-gauge, and then they went to the 10-gauge, and the 10-gauge, the 12-gauge, and 16-gauge, 20-gauge, and 410-gauge were all, they all came from that design at that time. They would take the big 4-gauge, tie it on the front of a boat, and float it down the river till they got to the raft of geese, ducks, whatever they were wanting to kill that at that time. And then they would set that thing off, and it was braced to the front of the boat. Instead of, it was so, such a heavy recoil until the man couldn't hold it in his hands. And it started out, this powder is what we call today black powder, or the where we use them in black powder weapons. We call them coal burners, and there's so much smoke and everything there to, you had to wait till the smoke cleared away before you could check your target to see if you had hit the target. Then they went from then to a powder called Triton Trilios. It is a smokeless substance. It came in little cartridges of the form of a little cartridge. The grain of powder was at almost as big as a 22 rifle shell. And they were used for the big guns during World War I, and the big 16-inch disappearing barbette guns that they used for sea coast. It had a range of about 40 miles out to sea. The projectile weighed about 1,640 pounds, with a bursting charge of powder on the inside of it, with a striking fuse on the front. So when that fuse hit the ship, it had a delay on it, and it went on into the ship and then blew up. And that was used in the Sea Coast War, or Navy usually used that. Now, they had 155 millimeter howitzers, which had about a 6-foot barrel, and they were placed in parapets, and they were on shore. They were used against the ships, and just like the 16-inch barbette disappearing, the 16-inch barbette disappearing had an 18-foot barrel on it and weighed many, many tons. Then a man called Mr. Henry Browning developed or designed and developed a lot of sporting goods, and it's Browning as we know it today. He also designed the caliber 50 machine gun, which is the case is a half inch across, the caliber 30 machine gun, and they were both water-cooled at that time. The barrel ran through a tube of water to keep it cool, and it had a firing rate of about 650 rounds per minute, and created quite a bunch of heat or gas that as it expanded in these barrels, and they had to use a special metal called sterilite metal liners. This sterilite metal lining in the barrel was a heat resistance, or dissipated the heat very fast, that was collected in these barrels as the rate of fire, the friction from the bullets going out and the expanding gases would cause a terrific heat in there. It's about 54. Okay. Now, that was about 52 to 56 thousand pounds of pressure per square inch within the chamber of that gun when those gases expanded in there. So that was used also in the war. It was a forerunner of the electric models that we have now, the F-16 that had the T-141, which has about 5,000 rounds per minute rate of fire, and has a muzzle velocity of about 2,200 foot per second, and it is a 20 millimeter, a very large round for a mobile gun like that. They have six barrels in that gun, and each one fires six shots, clicks to the next barrel, fires six shots in order to give the other barrels a chance to cool off. We started using these weapons for war against each other in World War I. We had them first in the war between the states, Confederate War, and then old muzzle-loading weapons. It was very slow. It fired maybe once a minute or once every 2 minutes. It had to be completely reloaded, and that's the only type of weapons that we knew at that time. And then we graduated into, just before World War I, to the 1903 Springfield and the .30-06 caliber. Several of your large big game rifles were designed and built, and using the single charge all in one case, along with the primer of the case, the primer, the powder, our propellant charge, and then the bullet in on top of that, and then this was sealed, so if it rained, it got wet, it did not wet your powder and keep you from shooting. In the old rifles, flintlocks and old wheel guns, they had to, if the powder got damp just a little bit, it would not fire, and they're just as worthless as a stick. So then they went into the newer type guns, like the beginning with the 1903 Springfield and the .30-06 caliber, and which they do use until this day. And this was the date of the gun, or the name of the gun, dates the gun back. And the 1903 Springfield is 1903 design, and then that gun was used through World War I and into part of World War II. It was used as a sniper's rifle in the first part of World War II. It was used as a regular arm in World War I, and the Marines used it all during the peacetime for a training rifle, and they all had to qualify with this 1903 Springfield with open sights at 1,000 yards. Now, that sounds like a long ways out, and it is. the target that they used looked like it was about the size of your thumbnail, but it was 6 foot across when you got up to it and took a look at it. But you had a long ways between. We went into there from automatic weapons, which were used in the latter part of World War I, which was a 30 caliber Browning machine gun, which we mentioned before, a caliber 50 Browning machine gun, water cooled, that we mentioned before, and also then we went into some of the larger guns in the beginning of World War II, and in the 20 millimeter, the 155, the 16-inch barbette disappearing, and also some of your newer rifles were designed, like the M1 Garand. M1 Garand was in the 30-06 caliber. You also had a 30 caliber carbine, which was both semi-automatic or self-loaders, as it was known.